You're about to listen to Perfume on the Radio, a periodic radio show and podcast where we explore the world through the lens of scent.
Smells good, Mom.
Make any space the space. Whiffers.
Do you suffer from scent aesthesia?
It's Perfume on the Radio. Tune in, it's just a stereo. This is Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM.
You're listening to Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM.
Sometimes people are so interesting and so experienced and so kind that it's hard not to imagine them being touched at birth by a sort of secret elfin wand. They have the magic. And so it is with John Steele. At the Institute for Art and Olfaction, we refer to John as the Indiana Jones of perfumery for the simple reason that he's lived a pretty amazing and slightly bizarre life. But one could just as easily call him a sort of aromatic Houdini. In the small velvet bags that dot his home, he stores tiny vials of the world's most astounding and rare aromatics. These vials contain ineffable beauty, expansive galaxies of smell that unfurl for the lucky recipient. People fetishize John's aromatic vials because they remind them, and they remind me, that perfumery is and always will be at the core a dialogue between us, our brains, our memories, and the molecule. The core act of smelling is an immensely personal one, and no one can tell you that your experience is not real and that your impressions are not valid, for the simple reason that they are truly yours and therefore true. For me, John has always understood that relationship, which he connects to his sense of the divine. But more on this in a minute. For now, an intro. John Steele is a perfumer, a lecturer, a former archaeologist, an ethnobotanist, and something of an aromatherapy historian. Above all, John is a perpetual student with an active and researched interest in shamanic practices with scent. We recorded this interview at John's house in Los Angeles, which is a sprawling mid-century ranch home hidden behind tall trees on a quiet street in the San Fernando Valley. To paint a picture, we sat together on his sofa and huddled up over the microphone in a tall vaulted living room with the sun streaming in through floor-to-ceiling windows. Because John lives under the Burbank Airport flight path, an occasional airplane flies overhead. But even with these sound interruptions, it was cozy, and we spend our hour together having a good old-fashioned chat. This episode of Perfume on the Radio is long overdue, and I'm thrilled to reignite the audio practice with John. We're calling the episode The Quiet Magic of John Steele. My name is Saskia Wilson-Brown, and I'm super happy to be here, and most particularly in such excellent company. So, friends, let's get started. Here's John Steele.
Hi. How's it going?
Well, yeah, so this has been a long time coming.
It has. We've talked about doing this for, I think, a couple of years.
Yeah, but I think it's now reached a level of aromatic maturity.
Yeah, well, who's reached that level?
We have.
You and I.
Yeah, yeah.
You've reached that level a while ago.
No. It's not really. As soon as one is too mature, then it's all over.
Well, what happens when you're too mature?
I think that you get complacent.
Yeah, it's true. So I sort of was hoping we could start by just the basics, who you are, you know, how you got into working with aromatic materials.
Okay, so I am John Steele, and I got into working with aromatic materials when I lived in London in the 80s. I was teaching at the University of London then in megalithic archaeology and general systems theory. That's interdisciplinary thought. Mm-hmm. And so I had a masseuse who did shiatsu, and I said, after a treatment, I said, I'm still having trouble sleeping. She said, oh, you need lavender oil. And so I said, what do I do? They put it in the bed, they put it on the pillow, you put it, you know. And she gave me a bottle, and it was a moment like kind of in that film Dances with Wolves, mm-hmm. where everything comes clear, like it was crystalline, it was clear, it was fragrant, and there was an elegance to that. So she said, well, this is called aromatherapy, and I can direct you to some sources, and it all went at that point into the milieu in London at that time was aromatherapy was just coming from France into England. And the main literary vehicle for that was Robert Tisserand. And so he had written this book called The Art of Aromatherapy. That was the only book around. So I read it about five times in a row, just one after the other, because there was I was learning it, and repetition brought it. And at the same time, I went to one of the first kind of mind-body fairs was in London, and I think in 1984. And everybody had a booth, and I was working on a doctoral thesis on memory. And I was working on this biofeedback stand, which had this wonderful EEG, which showed both right and left hemisphere at the same time. And I got to know the designer, the maker of it, and the biofeedback guy. He was a biophysicist. I really got into this looking at brainwaves. And I said, because people are coming there and you're just hooking them up and you're seeing what they do. And I said, I wonder what would happen if I had some essential oils right there at the fair and put them under people, got a baseline, then put them under people's noses. I said, let's do it. So I walked over to Robert Tisserand's stand and I said, can I borrow some oils? I want to test what they do to the brain. I'll bring them back. He said, sounds good. So they gave me a couple. And people would come, and I'd see their baseline, and I'd put under a lavender, and I'd see it go down. You could see, first of all, the two hemispheres became equal by the aromatic input. It wasn't as asymmetric. The relaxing ones brought it down to alpha waves, and the stimulants, like cardamom, black pepper, brought it up to beta, which is high frequency. They did. It did exactly what folklore and herbalism said they would do. But all of a sudden, there was some clarity. Afterwards, I gave them back the oils, and they said, oh, Robert would really like to know about this because he's always wanted some scientific confirmation. He called me up in his laconic voice and said, I heard you, you know, use some of the oils to do it, and he said, I'm very interested, let's meet. And so that began a 30-year friendship with Robert as well.
Yeah.
And that's really the real intro point. And then I met Julia Lawless. And her mother was a scientist, and she lived up in some remote island in Finland. And she comes down every couple of years. And Julia invited me over. He said, would you like to meet my mom? She sourced all these oils. I said, yeah. So I went over, and at the end of the conversation, I was so knocked out with all the rare things she had. She said, would you like to take some and see if you can sell them? I said, sure. So she gave me a selection, wrote them down, and I just began introducing people and Robert's book in one hand and the oils. And that's really how it took off. But London was really a hub of English-speaking aromatherapy.
And I feel like now a hub is here, because you're here. Robert Tisserand is now here in Southern California. Would you say that's true? Or, I mean, how has it evolved, I guess?
There's two schools, really major schools of aromatherapy. One is the English style, and one is French medical aromatherapy. And that's Dr. Daniel Penoel, Pierre Francombe, Kurt Schnaubelt, all fall into that. And I've studied with all of those guys. And then there is the more massage-based practice of aromatherapy, which is more Western. And they use slightly different oils. And so the French medical tradition brought in these things like Ravensara and different types of thyme, and linalool, thyme tuyenol, thyme saturides. I mean, really like rare animals. And each one had a specific chemical action. You began to know by the molecules. You studied aromachemistry too. You began to know kind of like the Rosetta Stone, so to speak. That oxides are expectorant, esters are relaxing, phenols are anti-infectious. And once you learn that, you can begin to get a grip on where things are going to go therapeutically. Mm-hmm. So I would say here in Southern California, the emphasis, unless you've studied with any of the French people, is more towards massage and safety. I think aromatherapy is spread, and people are taking it off to every permutation, spiritual, psychic, mm-hmm. this one, that one. But it is the same element. You've got to know the properties of the oils.
Right.
And you become aware of small details, like just because something is organic, it may not have the most beautiful fragrance. Mm-hmm. And so the ideal thing is to get the stuff with, if possible, the organic or wildcrafted and the beautiful fragrance. Mm-hmm. I think aromatherapy here is in a very good state. You know, my friend Robert, who you know.
And we're talking about Robert
Berryman.
Mm-hmm. It was his company, Zianya Aromatherapy.
Yeah, and Robert is, he's a wonderful masseuse, and he's done all this work on kind of synesthetic healing. Mm-hmm. Aromatics are being married to different things, married to music, married to touch, mm-hmm. married to taste.
And light also.
He does the neural light. So it is an exciting time here, and it is also exciting time, not only in aromatherapy, because funnily enough, I don't consider myself an aromatherapist mm-hmm. per se. I don't have a shingle out that says, your appointment is and get on the table. I don't do that. I mean, that makes Los Angeles special, but you, just what you've done at the IAO, you've heard me say it 100 times. I mean, what you have brought an axis of awareness to the fragrance side here that is just unparalleled.
Thank you.
So there is kind of, I feel, an olfactory renaissance in this neck of the woods of Los Angeles because of what you've done on the IAO in the kind of, it's been so wonderfully variegated, plus everything. It's a very rich milieu here.
It is. I think you're right. So you said that there's different sort of, spokes on the wheel of aromatherapy. You said there's healing, there's spirituality, and so on. So what is it about these materials that interests you?
Okay, so the thing is, I find that I'm what I would call an aromatic omnivore. I've studied with French doctors, mm-hmm. Russian doctors, the therapeutic aspect. I'm interested in healing. I'm interested in resolving an out-of-balance state with a balanced state. And I'm interested also in the pure fragrance level. Mm-hmm. Just the pure fragrance. I mean...
So the aesthetic.
The aesthetics just to the max. Mm-hmm. I look at the oils that I carry... It's like aromatic racehorses, mm-hmm. and I want the best stable. Mm-hmm. I want the most beautiful elements, and I try to get. I'm really particular on things that I will choose, and I find that there is a real, not just a market, because that sounds so economic, but there is a real interest for. There's an appetite mm-hmm. for new materials.
Oh, for sure.
And it's never ending because distilling is also up. It's not only in the hands of the big distillers. Mm-hmm. It's now people are doing small-scale distillations.
Totally.
And so, therefore, you're getting things which have never been distilled before or made accessible to the public. You have to understand that there was a certain kind of anonymity in the world of perfume. In the early days, one didn't know the perfumer was like whoever the company is. Mm-hmm. They would say Elizabeth Taylor, White Diamonds, mm-hmm, or whatever, mm-hmm, but she didn't obviously
make the perfume.
Yeah. So there is this behind the scenes. And I think what's happened now, people have been coming out and made visible and tangible, mm-hmm, and smell and fragrance has really had a renaissance. But in the middle, the thing that really interests me is the whole idea of fragrance and consciousness. Fragrance and what I would call waking up. In the terms of awareness, mm-hmm, just pure awareness, and but with waking up, mm-hmm, comes the connection to the divine by whatever name you want to call it. If you just want to say source, mm-hmm, whatever, because there is that sensation of when the connection to source comes through the apprehension of pure beauty or pure healing, there's an elevation and the soul then is in action. And that's why in my work with the Egyptian material, mm-hmm, which I did at the IAO, you know, there is this idea that this is not new. This is ancient. Nefertum, the ancient god, or Neter, as they call it, of perfume and fragrance in ancient Egypt, was very connected to, he represented the soul of plants, mm-hmm, versus the body of plants. So this soul quality is something that literally nurtures the soul. Mm-hmm. I'm profoundly interested in that, not only in ancient cultures, but in the anthropological panorama of different tribes. So there's fragrance in consciousness, fragrance in healing, and then pure fragrance, just the fragrance qua, mm-hmm, fragrance. One of the things that I haven't done at IAO, I did the one on
Egypt.
I did the one on Egypt, but I also did one early in the game in that big building with the shoe.
Oh, right, yeah,
the
Mother Hubbard 10 thing. Years ago.
Yeah, that one I did the fragrance in literature.
I remember that.
And so it wasn't just literature. It was like, how does this quote from this play, poem, novel, or sacred text, how does that give us a deep insight into fragrance and consciousness? So everybody brought a quote, and we drank some jasmine sambac hydrosol. We were all liquefied, and we had a great discussion. I enjoyed it. So I enjoy very much fragrance in creative arts. One thing that I didn't do is a section I call Dharma Flora.
Okay, so what is Dharma Flora?
Well, Dharma is teachings of awakening that can be, Buddhist, Taoist, Zen, which are very different thought processes than the Western mind. You always see the great teachers. They're sitting on these blooming lotus flowers.
Totally.
And so I've researched all the symbology of that and the quotes about fragrance, how fragrance is an emanation of the truth of something. Mm. And in fact, one of my things, this blue lotus emanation, I call it, an emanation means the expression manifested from within, so it's discernible without. In other words, the truth is being able to be represented in the physical world, not just an idea. So something that it can fully express the truth and the beauty. Incense is always coupled with meditation. Mm-hmm. It's to, you know, in the ancient world, for example, in ancient Egypt, the class of resins that were burned, it meant to please the gods. This was like aromatic internet. Mm-hmm. You know, it was pleasing because when you burned it, went up, mm-hmm, and it was fragrant. When frankincense or myrrh or mastic is not burned, it has no real discernible fragrance to it. It's only when it's burned, and thus the name perfume through smoke.
Right.
The class of these aromatic resins was called centr, S-E-N-T-R, and there are no vowels in the Egyptian language, so we don't know exactly. Mm-hmm. But it sounds suspiciously like scent.
Right.
And the idea, it means the odor of God.
Hmm.
So there's this idea that since fragrance is invisible, that, and it has this sensuous, discernible aspect to it, there is the strength of the of this invisible modality, and there's an architectural parallelism. So Dharma Flora is involved with the spirituality, the meditation, the idea of mindfulness, of waking up. Fragrance has a role in that.
Are there any, well, first of all, I'm reminded of in the Epic of Gilgamesh when the gods get fed up with the human squabbling and they send the flood and all the people die. And then the gods find that actually that was a bad idea because they're starving because they feed off the sacrifices. And anyway, I think that there's parallels across cultures, it seems, you know.
Oh, definitely. And then another aspect that I look at, which is right next to Dharma Flora, but it's more on the shamanic side. I'm very interested in shamanism.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in the 80s, I was kind of early 80s, friends of mine had a collection of my oils, and this shaman from the Amazon came up, and he smelled these things, and he said to my friends, he said, whoever is dealing with these oils, tell them to come to Brazil.
Hmm.
We want to meet. Because the access that they have of fragrance in a place like the Amazon is not finished products. There are flowers, barks, resins, but there isn't the alcohol in perfume or distillation. So I ended up going to Brazil and to a conference on ayahuasca. And the first day was pure science. You know, it was the beta carbolines and the this and how this inhibits this, and then you have a visionary experience. And the second day was, let's do it.
Oh, my God.
And you're driven off to the edge of the rainforest, and I had all my oils with me. And I smelled them throughout. There's a whole class of shamans in the Brazilian Amazon that are actually called perfumeros.
Really? So what is?
Well, what they do is they, if a person is having a tough time in an ayahuasca experience, most people know what it is now. It's the strongest hallucinogen. With a footnote here, they don't look at it like, let's get high.
No, it's
this is the exposure to all the invisible realities of your culture and your heritage and the gods and the forest and the animals. This is all about realization of the totality. And what happened was that there are stories of people in ayahuasca. Sometimes people, like in real life, they get to a point where they can't break a thought cycle.
Mm-hmm.
They're stuck. That's the operative word. They're stuck. And when they're stuck, the mind tends to go in these loops, these repetitive, compulsive loops. Why did I do that? Or why am I not worthy in this life? Or whatever it is. And I saw in the literature that for people in situations where there is this stuckness, the shamans were putting under their nose a certain herb.
Hmm.
And I went and researched that herb. And you've probably heard of Terence McKenna?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay,
yeah.
And his brother Dennis McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fortunate to know them both. Terence is the great visionary, the great bardic storyteller of the psychedelic. And Dennis is his brother, has been on all the same adventures, but he's the scientist. He's the ethnobotanist. And it has the real inner, you know, molecular understanding of what's happening. So at this conference, Dennis McKenna was there, but he said, that plant, it turned out to be Amazonian basil.
Hmm.
So I lucked even through the most basic materials, like even Tisserand's The Art of Aromatherapy, and you luck under Basil, and use just Basil generically, is good for tired, fatigued mind that is not thinking straight, that is just, you know. So I said, well, obviously, there's going to be a sharing of that propensity to break a cycle. That's what I think so much healing is about psychologically, is how do you break a cycle? And the other part of that is restore flow. Mm-hmm. This herb had this capacity to reorient by smell somebody's, you know, repetition compulsion cycle. You know, that's another aspect of fragrance and spirituality, but in from the shamanic domain. And part of the reason that that works so well is that the language that we're speaking in now is an alphabetic language. Mm-hmm. Fragrance is a non-linear language. It's very right brain, and it isn't put down into discrete bits, you know, discrete elements. There's a holistic flow to the whole thing. And this holistic flow is restored by fragrance. Another aspect that I'm interested in is people like with PTSD. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. It's cycling. You know, I was in Vietnam. I keep hearing the shells go off and the ambush and whatever. This idea is very simple. It's a big word, but they say magical aromatherapy. I don't know, did you ever come across the work of Scott Cunningham?
I think I have a book.
Yeah. So he was a great herbalist and early spiritual aromatherapist, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But it was to things like how to make a better living, using fragrance coupled with intentionality. Mm-hmm. So what I've become very interested in is for breaking people's patterns. I've got somebody now who's under tremendous PTSD, not like I have them all the time, but none of the psychological pharmaceuticals don't agree with the situation. So I was called up and said, can you take a crack at this? What I hope to be able to do is to couple out, say, two or three fragrances, which are not just pretty fragrances, but actually have the psycho-spiritual, mental action, which are going to be beneficial to a stuck, locked situation. And then what we're going to do in a little, what I would call imprinting ritual. Mm-hmm. That means that the person she's working with, if it's a psychologist or a spiritual person, says, we are now going to set these three affirmations for transformational evolutionary change. You always do X, so Y is going to be, when I meet the situation, I am going to meet it and somehow have a triumphant elevation mm-hmm. from it, or transformation. Even if you don't believe in the affirmational process, there's a certain point when your as if becomes real. If you say, I will triumph, and no matter what, I'm going to get through this, your belief structure on repetition becomes real over time. And the really interesting thing, the imprinting ritual, is like that you want to couple the affirmations for change with particular oils. So the idea is when these people are out in the real world, not just with the healer or the shaman or the meditator mm-hmm. or the psychologist, when they're out in the real world and something presses the potential panic button, they reach in, get the oil, and smell. And the idea, the imprinting ceremony is such that when I smell this oil, the affirmations come out coupled with the fragrance. Mm. There's a translation which is not lost from the unwordable to the wordable, you know, from the fragrance carries the potential trigger. It's a way of breaking through locked situations. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to get about three fragrances. We're going to couple intentionalities with each one, but you really have to set it so the person repeats. When I smell this, for example, a really beautiful oil I'm working with now, angelica seed oil. It's quite different from the root. You smelled this?
I have, but not yours.
Okay, but it's got this beautiful hot white light in a cube of, you know, luminescence. And the name of this plant botanically is Angelica Archangelica. So it's full of angels, that angelic thing. So it's, you couple in even that religious overtone. It has the capacity in its way to reorient, not only reorient, but strengthen the evolutionary pathways for change. You don't just pick anything random. You try to pick an oil that will go with what is required, that has power.
Okay, so the oil itself has a sort of intelligence or
that is the term. This is what we call as an aspect of plant intelligence. Okay. So that's another thing I'm interested in. But then I'm also interested in this idea in a plant intelligence, which is a growing field right now. And aromatics is a subset of big plant intelligence. So a lot of work with fungi right now and the incredible subterranean structures of mycelium that carry intelligence from certain roots to certain plants. I will give you these minerals if you give me these minerals. If you give me sugars, I will give you oxygen and so forth. I mean, it's a network of intelligence, and the aromatic plants have this, they up the game with the fragrance. It's not just non-smelling, but when you put the smelling on top of that. So it's quite interesting to look at all these moving parts. I mean, as you can probably see from all the things we've just outlined, my approach to all this is transdisciplinary. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that's where the juice is where one thing rubs up another and finds a way to communicate by some kind of interface language to make transformation, whether it's healing, you know, there's physical healing, but all this soul healing, physical healing, and aspects like that. And, you know, and then just dealing with perfumers. Mm-hmm. Perfumers come over, and instead of doing wine tasting, I open up all the bags because I'm constantly sourcing for new oils, and that's exciting. So I like the research of how you can come up with something of really good quality.
So this is something you've been doing for a long time, which is sort of finding and sourcing these
yes.
oils. So can you tell me sort of how you got into that aspect of your work of sourcing these materials? And I should say that people call John the Indiana Jones of perfumery, and there's a little bit of a mythology around this, but I'm curious to hear about it from your perspective.
You know, you mean how I got into sourcing? One of my mentors was actually a Ukrainian woman. Her name is Galina Lysin. She's my mentor in medical aromatherapy, because in Russia, where she studied at the time, there was no, you know, war going on.
Right.
When she studied, you had 5 years of medical aromatherapy taught right next to what do the intestines do, what does the heart do. It's unified. I would buy things from her, and she would tell me where they're from, and she would tell me she's up at all hours of night because she's faxing before the internet, and she's getting from here, and then she retired. So I realized that I've got to step up to the plate, and, you know, sure, I can get things from other people that I know and trust, but I like that idea of getting something from the source,
mm-hmm.
like the stuff African wild sage, which in Swahili has this beautiful name, Laleshwa.
Le Lechois.
Yeah. Animals use it. They use it to keep away. They rub up against it to keep insects, and it's supposed to keep away bad dreams and bad spirits. But it also, it turns out that its use is almost identical to the spectrum you'd use tea tree for. You know, anti-inflammatory, good for infections and skin. And so it's big medicine, but getting it from Kenya is, it takes a while to make the connections and get the airlines straight. You know, there's a lot of moving parts. And I kind of really enjoyed that. Mm.
While John and I were talking, we had sitting in front of us on a glass table a small velvet bag. At this stage of the chat, John opened it up and started to reveal its contents, little glass vials with handwritten labels containing some of his more recent aromatic acquisitions. He invited me to join him in a smelling session, which admittedly is not ideal for a podcast format, but I selfishly said yes, and what follows is our discussion about the aromatics.
So what we have in front of us, John and I, sitting here in his living room, is a little bag, which I know, John, and I know it contains some beautiful aromatics. So I'm curious if you wanted to talk us through a couple of the actual materials that you have here.
Okay.
And obviously we can't smell on the radio.
No, but this is why you call perfume on the radio.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it best we can.
No, we'll do the best we can. This is a new one, which I recently got. It's called Pink Champaka Absolute.
Pink Champaka Absolute.
Yeah, it's from India. And champaka is it's like the Indian version of magnolia. They're sometimes they see them almost as identical. They're not. Because of the terroir being that wine term for light soil, air, you know, geology, critters. This particular one, there's white champaka, there's golden champaka, there's red champaka, but this is like, this is Pink Champaka Absolute. You have it's delicate.
Okay, so I'm bringing it up to my nose. Yeah, it definitely has I could see why people, it's in the vein of the big indolic white flowers, but it's subtler, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's subtler. It's got a etheric, kind of etheric velvet note that's kind of pinkish. So that's the pink note.
Hence the pink.
Here is this angelica seed.
Oh, this the one is, for the PTSD.
Yeah, this
no,
one.
No, this is the one for the shamanist.
No, this is the PTSD.
Okay.
Now, this is grown by French medical herbalists, so it's super organic. And just get your nose into that one.
Wow. I mean, it definitely has that. You spoke earlier about how it has this sort of radiant whiteness.
Yes.
Sort of like you're enveloped in a very bright, intense light. It's beautiful. I mean.
And you can tell when you smell it, there it's not, you don't get just an aesthetic. I don't know, for me, I smell, I get this wave, this tangible wave.
Yeah.
I mean, it's powerful.
It is. And it's quite strong. I mean, I could see how it sort of interrupts if you're too stuck in your head.
Yes, exactly.
It just sort of knocks that out.
So you, again, the strategy is interrupt obsessive compulsive and restore flow.
Right.
So, here's one by my friend Jack Chaitman, my friend who I refer to as a Da Vinci of distillation. Mm-hmm. He's truly remarkable. This is copper distilled Boswellia sacra from Oman. This is
AKA frankincense.
Yeah.
Where does your... Wow. Wow, that is...
So... Hydro distilling is what he does versus steam distilling. When you distill like this, in a nutshell, you get what are called in the technical aspects, you get all the trace molecules which steam is going to volatilize because of too much heat. Mm. And it's those trace molecules that exist in parts per billion. If you have a graph of peaks in a GC, This molecule is 60% in this oil. This one is 30. This is 20. And at the bottom of the graph, there's these little blips. Mm-hmm. People don't pay. That's the trace molecules. Mm. The trace molecules hold the magic. It's paradoxical. These little tiny parts per billion kind of molecules bring it into a different domain. And that's where my teacher in India, Ramakant, would say, this is where the soul of the plant lies, right in this intersection of spirit and matter. The trace molecules, they're so small, it's virtually homeopathic. Here is one from India. These are ones, and most attars in India have a sandalwood base, and then they have either resins, florals, or woods and spices, singular or in combination, but always a sandalwood base. These people I know in India are starting to use vetiver as a base instead, and this is vetiver and cuda.
Cuda
is a long, white, tapering flower that is gardenia-esque with a horseradish tail.
Yeah, so I've smelt that material before, and I found it to be almost socky, like wet sock.
A little bit. But you see the little spiciness at the tail?
Well, this is different. The vetiver, the co-distillation, brings a different aspect to it. I wish everyone listening could smell with us, you'll have to come up and visit John.
No, but this is just cool. Now, here, this is a red mandarin from Brazil. I love red mandarins, my favorite citrus. This, I'm not going to even say anything. You smell.
Just let me discover for myself. Okay. Oh, wow, that is juicy, and emotionally it's enveloping, uplifting, happy making.
Yes, all of those things. And you hit the nail on the head when you said juicy, because what this has in it is not only the peel, it has a touch of the juice. There's a silent reconnection to source. That's all I can say. Here is a rose from Georgia called Southern Belle.
It's Southern Belle rose from Georgia.
It's a Rose Otto. Wow. And this is, and Georgia is right next to Ukraine. And this is a rose that is from a farm developed by two sisters who love roses. And this is their first crop in 2017. And it's so different from Bulgarian rose, from Turkish rose. Instead of being precise, kind of there's a linear note, especially to the Bulgarian. This has this soft pink cloud with these like little golden sparkles. And I find for women who have issues of repetitive, you know, like I can't let go of this, that this, because it's raised by women especially, and I'm really into goddess cultures and archaeology, so that this really has an effectiveness for people who get stuck on emotional stuff, particularly women.
How many perfumes, how many materials do you carry at one time? Like how many?
I make it a point to deliberately not count. I don't want to know.
Yeah, I understand that.
I just like the idea of the mystery of it just being stuck, like cataloged. But here is one that I think you'll enjoy. This, usually, we're getting magnolia from China. This is magnolium from France, and it's beautiful.
Oh, wow. Wow. In the traditional sense of the term, this may be the most, quote, a smooth, beautiful fragrance I've smelled.
It is drop-dead gorgeous.
Yeah, it's round, it's sweet.
And it's delicate. There's a delicacy. I always talk about magnolia. There's a magnolia tree we have out there. It's called a fruity floral, typically. But I find the fruit, for me, is almost like an etheric honeydew floral.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's gentle. Yeah. It's got a gentleness to it also. But that honeydew aspect is, it's wet. It's like a wet smell.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense to anybody, but yeah.
Exactly. And here, this is another one of Jack Chaitman's. This is Boswellia serrata. This is Indian frankincense.
Oh, quite different from the other one we smelled earlier. Wow.
There's a kind of almost a spiralic note in it. But this is hydro-distilled in copper. And here's another one of his.
That's bright blue. It's like almost a swimming pool blue. It's, well, a little greener.
This is Hawaiian sandalwood.
Whoa, I've never seen...
No, this color is out of control.
It's completely blue.
Yes,
I've never seen
but
anything
it's
like
kind
it.
Of a turquoise teal blue.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, I should be more specific. It's a completely turquoise, sort of like the ocean, like a picture-perfect Hawaiian
ocean.
That's
the copper. And this is... grown on the slopes of a big volcano on the Big Island, and Hawaiian sandalwood.
Wow.
Hydro distilled.
It's got that sandalwood dustiness that is so recognizable, but it's totally different than other sandalwoods.
Than Indian sandalwoods. It's more of a top note. Now this, you just smelled the Indian frankincense.
I did.
And so if you take that Indian frankincense, the resin, and you put it in a clay pot in South India by the beach, you got to imagine this, with an open fire, and you put this right over the fire, and you toast it until it's just reduced to ash, and then you later distill that in, say, water. You remember what that smelled like in Indian?
Yeah.
This is called Choya Loban.
Okay, so here I'm getting... everything John just said, the sort of reduced fire ash,
Melly, kind of almost caramel toasted.
Well, yeah. Well, what I was going to say is there's this sort of edible aspect to it.
Yes, but smooth.
Definitely. Wow. And it has a definite aspect, like a cade-like, a burnt, fireplace.
But cade is almost like dirty sock.
This would be an excellent solution for that aspect of a perfume formulation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Huh.
So,
and what's that called? Choya Loban.
These are the kind of things that I look for. Things that sing with this aromatic song that's different than anything else, but there's a uniqueness in their representation.
How can one find you, John, in the world? Like if somebody wants to experience these materials or order from you or anything like that. Do you have a website? Do you have a phone number?
Okay, interesting question.
That's a super lame question, let's be honest.
It's a great question because I don't have a website.
Right.
And I've deliberately never had a website because at the beginning, I just found it wasn't in my consciousness to say, this is the best, this is the greatest, blah, blah, blah. I just said to the spirits of the plants, if you bring me the people you want me to work with, I will take really good time and try to really convey the truth and the healing and the beauty of what you are. So it's only until now. I mean, it's been 35 years of like that. But so it's all gone word of mouth. But I will give you email info@lifetreearomatics.com. You can drop an email.
Thank you, John. And also, I just want to say that you're one of these people that has sort of supplied and informed and cheerleaded such a whole generation of artisan perfume. For that, we all owe you a great debt.
Oh, it's so meaningful. You know, that's the thing. To me, the economics is not as important as this fabric of healing, of beauty, of meaning. So thank you and for the interview and for all the work that you've done.
That was the very lovely John Steele, and this was episode whatever of Perfume on the Radio. A special shout out to Jake Brady, who helped us through a creative block to edit this interview and allowed us to finish the show after a four-month delay. Oh, how we appreciate you, Jake. Perfume on the Radio is a radio show and podcast produced and presented by the Institute for Art and Olfaction, which is a nonprofit organization devoted to experimentation and access in the field of perfume. You can learn more about us at artandolfaction.com or on Instagram at artandolfaction, all spelled out. A few thanks. Jake Brady, Emma James, Maxwell Williams, and Darian Zahedi for the Perfume on the Radio interstitials. This episode of Perfume on the Radio will be archived on our website, perfumeontheradio.com. If you like what we do, please don't forget to rate and review us. It allows us to continue to bring you this periodic attempt to marry olfaction and audio. I'm Saskia Wilson-Brown, and it's been my pleasure to be here with you. We'll release another episode soon. Until then, friends, keep it kind, keep it real, and keep it aromatic.
Perfume on the Radio. This is Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM. This is Perfume on the Radio. Tune in just
that's the stereo. This is Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM. This is Perfume on the Radio. Tune in to just the stereo. This is Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM.
You're listening to Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM.